How you going? I'm Marty Fox, and you're listening to Uncommon.
This podcast is brought to you by Neural Media. Are you an entrepreneur or marketer who needs help making podcasts, video, or animation? Perhaps you don't have time to manage a freelancer or the budget to deal with an agency. Well, Neural Media can help you with simple and affordable content creation, saving you time and money by taking away the pain of producing that content. To learn more, head to neural.com/media. That's neural.com/media. Play around with our pricing or request a callback directly. Listeners to the show receive a special discount by using the promo code UNCOMMON. Welcome to another episode of Uncommon. My name's Jordan Michaelides and I'm your host. In this episode, I have for you Marty Fox. Marty is the founder and owner of White Fox Real Estate Marketing and Productions. He's a loving family man and an exceptional deal closer noted for many high-profile listings. The interview with Marty was quite timely for me personally. In the past few weeks, I've been sort of assessing what type of man I want to be in my life. And in the space of a few weeks, Marty's interview, amongst probably two others, has really helped me refine what that means. And for years, and no genuine reason at all, I had this sort of multi-billionaire old archetype in my head, you know, like working insane hours just to grow a ginormous business. But I think Marty's smart approach to life that actually prioritizes health and family first, then business, has made me realize that you can still have an exceptional life and a successful business without needing to forfeit what matters most. He's a role model for a lot of young men like myself and a unique operator in the fascinating industry that is high-end real estate. There's a lot covered in this episode, including how you can win the day early in the day, how you can't pour from an empty cup, first ever auction and big wins, why nervous feelings are worth it, starting the White Fox brand and developing that marketing language that they use, and selling as a skill. If you want to help us grow, do leave us a rating on your podcast app or consider sharing with your friends. Just take a screenshot, post it on your Instagram story and tag us at @uncommon_podcast. To watch the episode in full, search Uncommon Podcast on YouTube and don't forget to like and subscribe. Show notes and all previous guests can be found at neural.com/podcast. That's neural.com/podcast. But thank you so much for listening, our regulars for coming back, and newbies for giving us a shot. I hope you'll enjoy this conversation with Marty Fox. Marty.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
Not too bad. I was thinking many ways to start this conversation off. We've had a good chat in the kitchen beforehand. There's many questions I wanted to ask, like whether Lockie Mains has actually hit puberty yet. Or whether, I think this is probably the best one from Lana, how bad is your OCD?
I think it gets better with the generations.
Okay.
I think my grandmother would be the worst.
Okay.
Followed by my mum, and then it settles down with me. But it's pretty bad.
What's bad mean?
Just attention to detail. Yep. So, you know, it's not so much the cleanliness and all that sort of stuff. I'm not washing my hands and flicking light switches three times every time I want to get in and out of a room.
Yeah.
It's more to do with detail. Okay. So, it's the OCD and the process of the business, I'd say.
Yeah, I think that is so, my dad is definitely like that, and it's something my sister and I have definitely picked up. It's a great feature to have as an individual for certain things, but sometimes it can become a little bit overbearing. But it's probably also the reason why people are able to be successful in their chosen fields, because it allows you to knock off those 1%ers, as you like to say.
Yeah, and be highly vigilant on certain aspects of what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's the OCD. It's
yeah.
Yeah.
That vigilance, I think, is key.
Mm.
What did you think you were going to be when you were a kid?
Mate, it could have gone any way. I always knew that I'd be doing something which was not behind a desk.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that. I could have been a hairdresser like my father.
Okay.
You know, that was always a big option. You know, I'd be sweeping floors and washing people's hair as a teenager on school holidays and doing things like that. So what I liked about the salon was Dad was always talking to people, always laughing, on his feet, and he was always having fun. So I think that was always in my head, and I wanted to emulate that type of lifestyle.
Yeah.
But I don't think I wanted to cut hair.
What do you think it was when you saw him having fun that you so enjoyed? Was it the response that he'd get from people?
He still is. He's very quick-witted.
Yeah.
So I think, and it's funny, you look at your parents and the older you get, especially when you have children, you start to see really what you've picked up.
Yeah.
And I think with Dad, he's a very charismatic bloke. He's you know, the life of the party. He's very quick on his feet. And with Mum, she's very cutthroat in terms of how she perceives the world and how she is with people. She can really read the play. So I think I just see the combination from getting older really where your roots come from.
It is funny that I've had that recently, and more I've come to accept the fact that you know, maybe I'm like my father in this way or my mother in this way, and I find it so funny when you're admitting that to them.
Yeah.
And also celebrating it a bit as well.
Definitely.
And they're like, see, I fucking told you.
Yeah, they finally are like, yeah, now you get it. But it's good. It's, mate, it's your DNA. And it's...
Yeah, it's who you are.
It is, 100%.
Do you think is there a core principle in life that you've taken with you today, something that really stands out from either of your parents, and maybe you just saw it or they said it to you?
You know, I'm just going to say what comes into my head, because it's funny. There's things that my mum has said which have just always stuck with me, and that one of them is just that the queen wipes her own ass. So never be scared of anyone. No one is above you, beneath you. It's just you need to deal with every single situation and person the same, but with you never changing.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's really carried me through, you know, with all the different schools that I've been to, two countries that I've lived in, different businesses that I've started. I've actually never changed. Mm. My skill set's grown as a professional, but I've pretty much always been the same.
How did your mum reinforce that? Did she always make you do things for yourself?
Well, I'm seeing a lot of it now with my kids. You know, when I put them to bed, I say, Freddie, you're the best. You can do whatever you want. I love you so much. You know, I was told those things time and time again. So I knew that I always had their love and support, which meant that as soon as I went into the world, I'd always be okay because I had the support at home.
Mm.
And I sort of feel like that now. My biggest thing is to win the day, because one day turns into a week, that week turns into a year. And for me, how I start my day is really how I end my day. And I start my day, I think, really positively, where I'm up early, I'll be in the gym, I'll sit with Freddie, I'll cook him breakfast, I'll watch some cartoons. And by the time I leave the house, I feel like I've actually already won. So I've had 3 hours with my family, and anything out in the world, it's almost all make believe. It's a show. The reality is when you're at home.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, come to the end of my career, that's all I have.
How long have you been doing that? That having that mindset that, you know, you've got to win the day in the morning.
I think that type of mindset's built over time.
Mm.
I always had a lot of friends, but it was always semi-outcast to a degree where, you know, I always felt like I was always thinking, always wanting to be somewhere. Like, I was actually really excited to become an adult. Like, you know, I remember being 13, 14, really just wanting to get out of school, wanting to be an adult already, you know, wanting to be married, wanting to have a business, wanting to be on my own two feet and not have to rely on people. You know, I've had a lot of people sort of let me down along the way with certain things. So to be in control of my own destiny was always something that I really strive to have. You know, I wanted to grow up early.
Yeah.
But not lose the fun side of things as well. So I love taking on responsibility. I love having my back up against the wall. I love the pressure of having to perform. And I think that's what really drives me.
Yeah. Yeah, because that to me, that mindset of winning the day, while I've known it's there generally in principle through books that I read or people that speak about it, I've never really, not that I haven't had to apply it, but I've never really applied it properly. And I've had to learn this the hard way in the last year or so, I think, because I had these food issues. In short, I had these food issues. I learned that I basically had health anxiety, which sort of stems from that OCD side of the family, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And You know,
too much Googling.
Too much Googling. It really is. Like, but too much in your head. And
but were you reading a lot of books and stuff?
What about general?
About health and...
No, not really. I mean, I'd always sort of been intrigued by performance generally, but not at that point. It came on before that. So, like, I probably had these food issues when I was 21, but it all sort of came to a head in the last year where it turned into full-blown anxiety. But the lesson of it was that you need to just focus on winning the day, which for me as a person who's often in my head and thinking strategically about things, going all over here, there, sometimes you just need to really, you know, realize that you're like your dad. You need to be exercising every single day because otherwise you're going to be an anxious wreck, and you need to do these things in the morning before you actually start work because otherwise you're not going to get anything done.
Mm. And then you're not letting other things really affect you that much because you're already ahead. So mentally, I feel that I've already won, which means that anything from here on out is actually just a bonus.
Yeah, I think it's very, very important. And I got to say in the last few months, watching you over Instagram has been very, because a lot of the time for younger guys like myself, you know, you're looking for, there's always the cliche things like this entrepreneur or that entrepreneur, but they're always like billionaires or, you know, multi-millionaires, or they don't actually cover anything about what they do. So I found it very interesting watching yourself amongst a few others to see how you approach the day and sort of using that as a mark in a way. I think that a lot of people who would watch you would enjoy that as well. Do you get many people who sort of hit you up regularly about that sort of stuff?
Yeah, it's happened quite a lot, especially with people, you know, wanting, you know, say coaching or wanting talks to be given or wanting to pick my brain. And it gets to the point where I was doing it quite a lot with people. And my EA actually started saying, Marty, you're giving so much time aside to give these people these insights, which is great, but you're now losing time, which is actually going to cost you money, which is going to take you away from your core business, which is putting food on the table. So if you want to qualify certain people and they do really want to pick your brains, you're at that stage where you could probably charge for it. You know, I've been to, you know, uni, I left, I couldn't get a job. I got into real estate, started a software company, successfully sold that company, then went back into real estate, ran two offices, got out of that, did, you know, 7, 8, 9 renovations over that time, and now I've opened White Fox and then White Fox Real Estate. So I'm at that point where I now feel that I can give that type of advice and let people pick my brains, but unfortunately, it's now just not for free because I explain to people, if I take my eye off the ball, I'm that guy that once had a really successful business that then started giving too much preaching advice and then lost his business.
100%.
So,
yeah,
happy to help, happy to do all those sorts of things, but unfortunately, it's just not free anymore because of how many hours are in a day. And I've got a double shift, sometimes a triple shift. It's before work, I'm working. At work, I'm working. After work, I've got to help Charlotte. You know, I walk in the door and it's like, now it's her relief. So, I'm now just starting to get used to, you know, people are wanting coaching. Where's my coach?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's, you know, it's you can't. It's hard, mate. And I'm constantly learning. Like I feel weird when people want this advice and so forth because at the end of the day, I'm freestyling. I'm running to my lane and for me it works. It may not work for other people, you know, because I stay very unstructured. My main structure is on a Monday. It's very structured with who I meet and see. But then the rest of the week, it's fully freestyled. It's chasing face-to-faces. So my theory is the more people I sit down with and talk to, not just willy-nilly, it's not just a catch-up to talk shit. There's always an agenda for the meeting, whether it be from them or myself, but that face-to-face will turn into something, whether it is immediately or within a year or two, it always comes to fruition.
Yeah. And I think you're definitely right. I think there'll come a point where maybe you can do that. I mean, you look at people like the Gary Vaynerchuks of the world where they run these sort of boardroom pep talk catch-ups with groups of people who are paying members, I guess. It's for a very select group of people. And maybe in a future world, a few years down the track, you'd be able to do that. But I think for now, if you continue doing what you're doing on Instagram, I think people enjoy that enough.
Yeah. Well, what we've actually had to do is I've just given my first talk interstate, which is actually a training. I've done talks at conferences to tell the story of White Fox and so forth, but I've never actually been invited into a company to give a training session. So that was in Canberra a week or so ago.
That's right.
Which was good because obviously, you know, you paid for your time, but their feedback was quite amazing as well, that they said it was one of their best training sessions that they'd had, and they've got some of the best trainers in Australia giving them sessions, and they preferred my side hustle session than these guys that are doing it as a profession. Yeah. And I thought that was pretty cool because most people do it post-career. Not many people do it at either the height of their career or on their way to becoming the best in their field.
Well, the difference is that you're in it.
I'm in the trenches, yeah.
Yeah, you definitely are. I want to just touch base on how you actually got in it. You know, I found it was super interesting. There is a video of you on YouTube, which I'll give you a link, of your first ever auction.
Okay, not many people have been able to sniff that out. It is. Did you hear the pigeons in the background?
Yeah. It went for a total of 3 minutes.
Not a bid.
Not a bid.
Shaved head.
Mind you, it was at a totally different era. It was like 2009, yeah? No. It was sort of way back.
It would have been 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's like just after the GFC. So it's not exactly like we're in an intense market as it is now. As, like the Melbourne market in 10 years has just dramatically changed. But what was interesting to me was from that auction, how long afterwards did you think, I want a place with my name on the door?
So before that auction, I actually wrote down White Fox. So in my first week, at that agency, I went up to the receptionist and I showed the name, White Fox, and I said, this will happen one day. And that receptionist's name was Helen. I think it was it would have been the first week of opening White Fox. I literally called her. I could find it even on Instagram when she first saw the branding. And she's always called me Monster. And she went, Monster, I cannot believe 9 years ago you said that you'd do it and you've done it.
Right.
So I'd never even cut a deal, and I still had said that White Fox would be happening.
Why did she call you Monster?
I don't know, Marty the Monster. Marty the Monster. I don't know why, but that was my nickname.
Can you tell the audience, there was a super interesting story. I don't know if this was still at Century 21, but you told it on Tom Panos's show, his real estate gym. I think there's a good lesson to learn in the story of that first big listing from the lady in Elwood.
Yeah, Tamara. This was the first big win off my own back. And I told this lady an apartment in Elwood. She said that she had a house that she wanted to sell in Elwood, maybe worth around sort of 1.6, 1.7-ish. She was seeing agents. She liked my tenacity. I was young. I was, you know, flying by the seat of my pants. And she invited me in. So I did a full pitch. She then gave me a call and she said that, unfortunately, I didn't have the business, and I remember I jumped into Ruby the Red Rocket, my little 89 Holden Nova, which is a fake Toyota Corolla, and I went home and I was devastated, and I walked up into the apartment, saw Charlotte, and I thought I had it because I really got along well with Tamara. Like, the personal rapport was massive, but didn't get the gig. So called my boss at the time and said, Graham, I didn't get it. And he just said, Marty, has she signed yet? And I said, no, she hasn't signed. She's about to sign it with the other agency. And he said, get back in that car and explain why she's making a mistake and just go in there. You've got nothing to lose. You've already lost it. You already lost it. But see, my theory is I actually never had it. So I didn't lose anything. So that was something that I learned over time, that you haven't lost anything that you never had. So his advice was actually incorrect. However, his mindset was just get back in there.
Yeah.
And I went, knocked on the door. Actually, no, I buzzed, and she's like, hello. And I said, hey, it's Marty. Can I just come in for a second? She's like, okay. And I went in and I just explained. I said, look, this is the start of my career. This is the biggest opportunity I've had to date. I will live and breathe your asset. I've got no kids. I will put 24/7 into this. And I will treat your property and this transaction with more respect than anything on my plate at the moment. Mm. Please just give me the opportunity to prove it. And she literally signed.
Yeah.
And I jumped back in the car and I was like, I can't believe it. It's just making every single post count.
Yeah.
Any sniff of an opportunity, you can close if you go in guns blazing and they see the emotion into it. So this was a real emotional close.
Yeah. And that's, you had a brilliant quote in that interview. You said, it's not a hard business. You just have to ask that question and go through the pain. Do you think that's when you learnt that asking the awkward questions is a valuable, one of the most valuable skill sets in the business?
So my theory is if you're not getting that nervous energy and that twitch in the gut, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
And I keep trying to get that feeling as much as possible because that anxiousness or that excitement will convert into adrenaline.
Yeah.
The more you put yourself in those situations. So doing the talks, doing ARIC or flying up to Sydney to see Tom Panos, sitting here now having a chat to you, they're all experiences that I haven't done before. So before it, you're always a little bit apprehensive, which means that you do get that nervous gut feel. But I know that at the end of those things, you get this incredible adrenaline and you grow as a person and a professional because you're experiencing more. So
yeah,
these hard questions, they come up all the time. But in a setting like real estate, they used to be very hard questions to ask. Can I have the business? Or will you put that offer in? Or will we do this? Or won't we do that? And getting to the point where you've seen so many situations, you tend to know the answers for it. Those nerves dissipate and you just actually become a machine in your field.
Yeah, and I think your time after Century 21 is interesting where you founded Touchbase. I think that was where you built or reaffirmed this belief that you've always had that the industry in the most part is conservative and archaic, as you've said.
Yeah.
You know, this is where you sort of learnt how to build back-end procedures.
This was also more of a personal thing.
Yeah.
You know, going to university, coming back and falling into real estate, look, part of me felt as if like I'd failed to a degree because I wasn't using my degree, which is really weird.
What did you study?
Marketing and accounting.
That's right, yeah.
And, you know, a lot of my friends would say, oh, you know, you're just an agent or this and that. Like, it was really weird. It's like it's the public perception of a real estate agent is not as high as your solicitor or your accountant or your doctor. It's just the way that it is because of the barrier to entry. So to become a doctor and accountant, you know, there's a lot of study and then there's a lot of understudy and then, you know, trying to get in, there's competition. It's difficult. Whereas to be an agent, it's a pretty simple little course.
Yeah.
So it's the barrier to entry that makes it really tough on the industry. If they actually tightened it up a lot, it'd actually probably be a lot better. Mm. So it was more about becoming an agent and wanting to fulfill that entrepreneurial spirit within where I had to create something and execute it. I really wanted to find a product that I could invent to take it into a market that needed something to solve a problem, and that was Touchbase. First homeowners grant had come into real estate. We were meeting a shitload of people on the weekend. I wasn't getting back to all of them, even though I was saying I would, which is what builds that perception as, oh, the agent never got back to me. They say they're going to do something, overpromise and underdeliver.
Yeah.
So Touchbase was all about capturing data, making sure that data went into the database and being able to communicate quickly and effectively to all those people in real time with contracts or thank you messages so that your perception within the market was a lot higher. And that's what Touchbase was. It was the best communication tool on the market.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I thought I could take it to three different companies. It'd either be realestate.com, domain, or it would be the industry body, Real Estate Institute of Victoria. And I chose to go down that path and I sold it to them.
Interesting. Yeah, I think because you've done a lot of things now, like I watched some of the testimonials of clients. It's really interesting to hear how, because I can't stand my estate agent. I really cannot stand my the property manager. The property management team here is horrendous.
Mm. Property management's been one of those things that, you know, we waited a solid year to launch property management because they treat you as a tenant and they should be, everyone should be treating a tenant like a purchaser because they will convert into a purchaser at some point.
Exactly.
And your landlord should be treated like your vendor. Just because they're not paying a $40,000, $50,000 comm doesn't mean that they need to be treated any less.
Yeah.
So it's just this disparity where the industry is very driven by income as opposed to future business.
Yeah, and that's where a lot of these shit kicker estate agents get moved to, is the rental business. And it could also be the fact that you spoke about before, like, you know, we've had this one thing, I think it was like a tap downstairs, which has been meant to be fixed, or maybe it was a seal on a toilet or something like that. And it's been sitting there in the job thing for like 3 months, multiple calls, still no real response. So either they're incompetent or the systems are just not in place.
It's a combination of systems and incompetence.
Yeah.
It's a combination of both. But going back on what you said about, you know, the shit kickers get pushed to property management, it's not necessarily correct. It's more that a property manager's skill set is very different from a salesperson's skill set. Property managers deal with complaints 24/7, which means that they need to have a thicker skin, a higher resilience, they're just so different from a salesperson. Salesperson's a bit more extroverted, a bit more, you know, hard on the sleeve, more passionate, and can easily be rattled. A salesperson can really easily be rattled because they operate off emotion, whereas the property manager's skill set needs to be stable. You know, they know who they are. They know that they can't take things personal. So it's not the shit kicker that gets pushed to property management. It's just they're such different skill sets. You look at a really good property management division, and they're all really level-headed. They're more like business people, I find. Well, ours are.
Yeah.
And you look at a sales division, it's nuts.
Your time at Wilson's was interesting. I think this is where you really started to put in motion what would eventually become White Fox. And the way that you got there was super interesting. When you went to your boss and said, give me a carrot, he said, all right, make, I think it was 750K gross commission income.
Yeah, bill out 750K with an average sale price of 6.
Yeah.
Near impossible off no database.
Yeah. And so then you got into this idea. I think you mentioned this at the Rubenstein event, 50-50 kickers.
Mm.
Is this where you really learned to hustle, do you think? Or was it that you just came in and just thought, look, I just need to get there?
No, look, I was definitely always hustling. Like I go back to uni days selling these Christmas cookies. And, you know, I was selling these Christmas cookies around New Zealand.
Mm.
And I think they were maybe $15 a bucket or something. And the company would send you some sample buckets to taste. And I realized that for every bucket, I was maybe making $3. And I hit my quota, sold all the buckets that I had to. But then I asked that company to send me more sample buckets. So then post-Christmas, because these were Christmas cookies, I thought, you know what I'll do? I'll bring some life into the hospital. So these $15 buckets now, of which I had trolleys full, we're now on special for $5.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd go all the way through, sell all these buckets for $5, and I kept the profit, which was 100%. So I was just always thinking where, you know, to generate revenue, it's either in margin or sell more, you know?
And so do you think, so it's always sort of been there?
It's always been there wanting to cut deals.
What did the time at Wilson's teach you though?
Time at Wilson's really taught me how to just sit back to a degree with regards to where I wanted to be. Okay. So I would have had the income to support doing a business. Okay. I could have probably opened White Fox at, you know, 24, 25, 26 based on the property flips that my wife and I had done. So from a capital perspective, we would have been ready.
Right.
But I definitely wasn't ready in terms of maturity. You know, we were newly married. We wanted to still have fun and, you know, host a Friday night get-togethers on the porch at Surrey Road, South Yarra, and then end up at Hoo Ha and 161. And, mate, we were kids. You know, we were making... Charlotte was working at the Alfred Hospital.
How old were you?
24, 25, 26.
Okay.
So, Charlotte was, you know, she'd finally finished her degree. She wanted a few years in the field. She was doing night shift. I was running, you know, two of these three offices. So, Wilson was about growing and managing people. So it was the first opportunity to really just bring people in and train them up from nothing to something. So deliberately went out and hired people that had never been in real estate before to see if I could turn these people into really good operators in the real estate space. Mm-hmm. So that if I eventually did White Fox, I could recreate it. I could do it again. Mm-hmm. But then if I built a good brand and had people come into the business that knew the deal, then we would see exponential growth.
Okay.
And we can get to that when we get down the line, but that's now what we're seeing.
Well, that's an important point, because I've always had this itchy feeling to go out into my own business, but from what you've said there, it's sort of, do you feel that what by the time you got to White Fox, you were just itching to get there?
No, it's not so much the itch. So I judge something on how often it comes up naturally.
Okay.
So, for instance, let's just say Charlotte and I have been dating for 7 years. Oh, when are you getting married? Hot. When are you getting married? Hot. When the question's coming that much, you know that it's probably time.
Mm.
Okay. And then all of a sudden, it's when you're having kids. When you're having kids, like, you know when things are meant to happen, when people are bringing it up quite often, just throughout daily life. It was getting to the point with Wilson where I would be finishing in meetings, and every week I think I'd probably have 5 to 8 people say, "When are you starting your own company? When are you starting your own company?" So then, once that was happening enough, I knew, okay, I'm ready to rock and roll. I can do this. So it's almost like that affirmation from other people saying that, you know what, you're ready to rock and roll.
Yeah.
And you keep
striving in the process.
Exactly. And yeah. I just think that, yes, you can do things prematurely, which is fine. It's great. But I also had mortgages. I was holding a lot of stock in terms of personal assets. And, you know, you've got to be smart with things as well. You can't just put everything on the line and lose everything that you've worked so hard to get. For me, I always wanted to buy a property, because growing up, my parents had never bought a property. You know, kids would come over from school and, you know, we were brought up in a one bedder. So you'd go to mum's and there was a double bunk, me up on top and double bed at the bottom, and that's my mum and brother. So, you know, we never had that house that, you know, everyone sort of wants to grow up in.
Yeah.
And that was my motivating thing. So I'd be going to work wanting to just get enough income to go out and buy that first property that was mine. No landlord could kick us out. You know, it was just my own room. It was pretty crazy. What was the question? In terms of starting the business, enough people were saying you should start your own company.
Yeah.
So I knew that it was right. And then it was almost like the same thing with White Fox Marketing. So many people that we were transacting with an average sale price of $3 million, a lot of these clients of ours had their own businesses, and they'd say, "Marty, we love your branding, we love your website, your the way that you talk, and you know, your video production and your social media and all these different aspects. Can you help us?" So it got to the point where I was getting that question 6 to 8 times a week. So I turned to Aidan, my creative director, and said, "Mate, we should just start a business, White Fox Marketing." And you know, we're now 5 months in, and we've got just on 30 clients, which is ridiculous. Actually ridiculous. enough people were saying, "You guys should have a TV show, you guys should have a TV show, you guys should have a TV show." So now we're filming a TV show. So we've started White Fox Productions. So if it comes up enough, you know that you should be doing it.
And the people want it.
Well, give what the people want.
Yeah. No, look, it's good because, you know, that's one of those things that I've had. It's something that my dad has always reaffirmed to me on. It's, you know, like, don't, you know, while you're running your business and you've got this other thing going on, don't go full hog on it until it's really ready. You know, like, I split my time between working at a fintech company and doing this, essentially, while Lauren runs the bulk of it. If I wanted to, I could basically quit tomorrow and start doing it full time. I'd have more than enough sales, but it's about tempering that.
Correct.
Because you have other things going on. Because that's something I've always struggled with.
Yeah. You just want to make sure that when you hit go, you fly. So my theory has always been, if you're going to do something, make sure that it's so well planned. You know, I had 6 to 9 months of building out White Fox's tone of voice, its content strategy, its social media strategy, its, every single touch point that we could potentially have with a consumer, whether it be a lawyer. You know, we list a property and it's an engine room. You know, the letters that go out, you know, we're sending communications to lawyers, you know, the deal, we've listed such and such mutual client, obvious, prepare the contracts, seals the deal, it'll be done soon. You know, like, everything is on tone with regards to the brand, whether it be a letter to a lawyer or a text message going back to a buyer or the ad that they see on realestate.com. Everything is consistent, and that does take time. So the OCD really came to fruition in the building of the brand, where we thought of every single possible touch point and rejigged it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do really like that. I think, You founded it in 2017, so you're going very well considering it's only just over 2 years, right?
Yeah, so high level stats, two and a half years, just under 20 staff involved in the businesses.
Yeah,
with about 750 million transacted.
Mm-hmm. You've got the place up on 150 Clarendon.
Yeah, we've got the most expensive property at the moment on the market at 46 million.
Yeah,
and we've really solidified ourselves as a brand in that top echelon of Australian real estate.
Yeah,
that isn't stale. That isn't antiquated.
Yeah.
And we're very digital in terms of how we market property. So,
and I think because from a few of these talks that you did, I got that was really set out. If you had not had those first 6 months, you probably wouldn't have done it as intensely as you had. And I think you had like a non-compete through your father-in-law, right? Something
correct.
Like that.
Yeah. Which was actually good because, you know, that non-compete gave Charlotte and I the opportunity to go off and almost, it was kind of like semi-retirement. You know, we were 26 and 27, weren't allowed to work. I had my money from getting out of the business. So we decided to do a flip in the property. So we bought a property up in Red Hill and went down there and renovated it, Chinese on the floor. And you know what it's like? You have a few reds up in Red Hill, you got an open fireplace and you're renovating, you tend to make a baby.
It does happen.
You tend to make a baby. So, that was a really cool period. It was there was so much belief and passion, and every single week something new would be done. You know, whether it was the White Fox notepad, then it was the business card, then it was
the boards.
Like seeing all these things in the background come to fruition. There were all these little wins, and then you string together 6 months of these little wins, and your self-belief becomes so strong. And you're so focused on your own lane, you're not looking at what anyone else is doing, you're almost semi-mad. you honestly believe your own shit in your head.
Yeah.
And I fully believed that we would be launching come the 1st of Feb and we were going to go hard.
Yeah. Well, I think that was a question I had is, you know, did you think that you guys won because of the marketing, or did the marketing make you win? Because it made you realize how old some of these systems were from all the other players, that people just found it and it became a self-fulfilling prophecy. And a way, it's sort of like you built that confidence every time you sat down with the client and they went, geez, this is nice, this is new, this is different. And then, you know, it started to become its own thing. I could totally see that.
Yeah. With business, and with a business that's got such a high emotional connection, real estate's very emotional. So if your emotional intelligence isn't up there with your intellectual, you're cooked. You cannot put these deals together. It's a big combination of everything. The business could have been called Wardrobe Real Estate. I still would have done well. My drive and self-belief is better than the brand.
Yeah.
The brand is phenomenal.
Yeah, you got to sell.
You have to sell.
Yeah.
You have to close. You have to be articulate, but you also have to be mathematical. Especially in a declining market, emotion means shit. Mm. So our ability to close deals at the moment is superior against other businesses because of our back-end mathematics.
Yeah.
Which I love because numbers don't lie.
Yeah.
So opinions do, but numbers don't. And when we're in meetings, we don't really speak like most other real estate agents. We're quite commercial in the way that we pitch, but we're very emotional in the way that we market.
Mm-hmm.
Two very different things. So we've got this ability to have, well, I do, the left side of the brain and the right side of the brain somehow working at the same pace, and that's what's producing the magic.
I think one of the magic things you did produce in those first 6 months was that development of the language. So the deal, obvious and seals the deal. Can you just explain to the audience what they actually mean?
Yes. I've actually never been asked this question. It was more so about sitting down with the team early on and identifying what had to happen to build this out to be different. So people always want to say, I want to be different, and they think a logo or a name is what's going to set you apart. It's actually how you communicate. And sitting down with Aiden, who is my business partner for White Fox Marketing, but also creative director of White Fox with me, was that it had to have the right tone of voice. And for White Fox, it was bold, polished, and matter of fact.
Mm.
So we do not do a thing unless those three criteria are hit. You know, the property's got to be marketed very bold, polished, matter of fact. The people within the business have to be bold, polished, matter of fact.
Yeah.
So they're the pillars. And then when it comes to the language, the deal, Obvious and Seals the Deal, they formed our framework for how we were to take properties to market and segment the copy within the collateral.
Yeah, because so most of the copy, for those listening, if you look in Melbourne, it's that cliche blurb, you know, first line, what's this about? Second line. This?
We don't have a first line.
Exactly.
We remove the first line and just put the deal.
Yeah.
We remove pricing and just put the deal. There's, you know, for the last 2 years, there's been all these issues with pricing and consumer affairs and this, that, and the other. And guess what? We've just sidestepped the whole lot of it. We were never involved. Because you log on and all you see is the deal. And it's funny because I was having a schnitzel up in Toorak Road a few weeks back and I'm sitting there smashing my face through this schnitzel and this ranger goes past and you just see the window go down and I was sitting there with a good friend of mine, Shira, and this guy just goes, "Oh, the deal!" You know what I mean? Like, and that's just branding.
Yeah.
Like, just hitting you square in the face and it was beautiful. So, the deal was just, you know, what is it? Obvious? Well, that's just selling the features.
Mm-hmm.
And Seals the Deal? Well, that's the sizzle. So, Obvious holds the steak. Seals the Deal is the sizzle. And the deal is, well, what are we talking about?
Yeah.
So.
And it's as simple as that?
Mate, it's as simple as that.
Were you surprised? How long did it take for it to cotton on? Like, how long after you started doing that did you start getting messages?
So, I'll tell you exactly what happened. We went live and I had a lot of text messages and a lot of emails and funny phone calls, people taking the piss. Or calling on a private number and going, "The deal, you're a fuckwit," and hanging up. That happened a lot.
Yeah.
Right? So
I'd love that though.
Mate, when you put yourself out there, you need to have a thick enough skin to cop the shit.
Yeah, but a lot of people, when you put yourself out there, whether it's stuff on YouTube or just branding or whatever, someone's always going to have a problem with it. The difference is that most of the people who complain don't ever do anything with themselves.
Yeah, so it was... I mean, to some degree, it did affect me. Like, I'm not, you know, but you just don't show it.
Yeah. You can't show it.
I reckon that where it really hit me was it would have been 4 or 5 months in and we had an inquiry from a buyer who sent us an email and it was along the lines of the deal. I want a single front at home in Middle Park. Obvious. 2-3 beds, off-street parking, north-facing rear. Seals the deal. I got 1.5 to spend. And I was like, holy shit, how good's this? One, you're never going to be a buyer because everything's over 2.
Yeah.
But they picked up on the language. So when the indirect consumer and the person that's not paying you your fee is speaking your language, you know you're onto something.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine that would be very, very fulfilling.
It was cool.
Was there anyone that sort of informed this, like, are there leaders in sort of marketing or persuasion that you've always read and that sort of...
Look, yeah. I don't read ever. I really dislike reading.
Mm-hmm.
I love people. I love talking to people and hearing what they've done. And in the creation of White Fox, that was, you know, talking to friends like Erica and Aiden, who were with the company Willow and Blake. And it was really... learning from what they had done and, you know, they... How cool is that? Your book says bold. Staring at me square in the face.
Who's that by? Bold is by Peter Diamandis. It's about, like, bold technology.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Boring. Yeah, so learning from others and applying that type of thinking into another field. That's really all it is. Yeah. You know, it's not reinventing the wheel. It was taking... a strategy from another industry. You know, they were doing a lot of work with different products and these products were doing really well in the marketplace. They had a language and a tone behind the brand that was through the words in which were written. And if it can work for a product, why can't it work for a service?
Okay. So, as simple as that?
So simple. But sometimes the most simple things are just the most beautiful.
Well, it's a brilliant little remix. It's fascinating as to whether... You don't think you would have come up with that without your business partner, Aiden? Do you think that...
Well, business partner in marketing, Aiden is a genius and we were always going to work together. You know, I remember going to the office and sitting down and saying, look, I want to start a real estate company. And they essentially both said, no, we can't do it. It stinks. And I was like, no, 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 I really want to do something different. And I remember Erica saying, she said, on a scale of 1 to 10, how bold do you want to go? I think I said 12. And then I just remember Aiden with his long hair just like sort of grinned, and I was like, yeah, this guy's on board. So, you know, we built it out, and the deal, Obvious and Seals the Deal, was born.
There you go. And I think an interesting part about you and your personality, as you said, you like people, you're listing people. It seems that you've always been a person that is intrigued by interesting things, whether it's knowing what a truffle sniffing dog is or giving opening bidders a bottle of champers. Where do you, you know, if you're taking in these ideas, do you think it just comes to you through osmosis in conversation, or are you regularly watching documentaries, listening to podcasts? Like, how does it?
I've never in my life listened to a podcast.
Okay.
Ever.
Really?
I don't read books.
Yeah.
But I believe that I see more people face to face every single week than 98% of people out there.
Yeah.
And I've got a very good memory.
Okay.
So I'm interested by a lot of things. I love cars. I love real estate. I love architecture. I love plants. I love pets. I love people. Males and females in their own rights, and what their stories are and what they're doing and their businesses. I love understanding the mechanics behind why someone does something.
Mm.
So that's what interests me.
Yeah.
So I just think, you know, I can leave any interaction and potentially gain something from it, from an idea or a new way of thinking. I'm very adaptable to change, and that I think comes from having to move schools a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, always being the new kid, always having to pitch, always having to make friends, be teased, cop shit left, right, and center, be resilient, moving to a new house. You know, my parents have both been married 3 times each, so, you know,
each
new stepmom or new stepdad.
Wow.
So I'm very, very adaptable to change. And if you think of the Darwin theory, it's not the biggest and strongest that survives, it's the most adaptable to change.
Mm-hmm.
So my ability to adapt and almost be a chameleon to my environment
is important.
Is very important.
Yeah.
And that's just through life. You know, that's just luck. What I thought was really unlucky growing up has actually turned to be quite fortuitous.
Mm-hmm. You've done a bit of work with Tim Gurn. I think you're both working on the St. Moritz project. And you've clearly got a strong relationship with old mate Gavin Rubinstein. I was just curious, like, these guys are at a similar mark to you. There are a certain echelon. I can see through osmosis that you guys have picked up certain details about each other, other's brands or the marketplace that you've integrated in your own way. What have you learnt from those two gents?
What I've learnt is that it's all very mutually beneficial.
Mm.
And it's what we've learnt from each other. And I think with anything, you know, if you're training hard on the footy field, you get to the A grade. And then if you're playing really well in the A grade and you become very good in that league, you get into the AFL. And then you get into form in the AFL, and all of a sudden you're winning a Brownlow and you're polling votes.
Yeah.
The better that you keep doing, the higher you become, and the more people you meet that have either got similar interests or experiencing similar things at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So what's interesting is just meeting these other people that are doing, they're running their race, that are doing really well, but behind closed doors, people don't understand how much they've had to put aside and miss out on to achieve that level of success at a young age.
Yeah.
Do
you have an example?
Oh, mate, just examples like, you know, whether it be, you know, love or travel or, you know, partying or whatever it might be. Like, I feel very lucky. I've been able to do everything. You know, I don't want to talk about other people's experiences and what their secrets and trials and tribulations are. I'm not, you know, I've become friends with these people and I respect their privacy. But in terms of myself, I've just always tried to stay really balanced. So I think, you know, by not missing out on anything, it means that I can really go for the jugular in this business, because like I said before, if you never had it, then you've got nothing to lose. Now that we've got something, you almost need to work even harder to keep it.
Yeah.
So there's almost more apprehension now with getting up and you know, achieving the things that we want, because what we have, we now need to build on. The foundations mm-hmm. are laid, business is doing what it's doing. How do we keep reinventing? How do we make sure that we're not getting caught by anyone else? How do we keep evolving? That's the part. And with these two guys in particular, they are constantly reinventing what it is that they do,
yeah,
which is important. And that's, I think, where we've all come together individually as friends. It all starts as business, but through business, you become friends.
And do you think to do that is just to be in sort of not a flow state, to be in the industry so deep and so hard that you're in this, things just come to you in a way?
I think the flow state's a really beautiful state. You can't stay in flow all the time.
Of course.
And, yeah, and coming to terms with when you're out of flow is something that you really need to get your head around.
Mm.
When you're in flow, it honestly feels as if you're on a different wavelength, you know. And sometimes I actually experienced it yesterday. My mathematics yesterday in three pitches back to back was so on point that everyone was confused in the room. And it felt unbelievable. And then I got home and I couldn't even cut up a polenta chip properly because my brain was that fried. But it has to come from achieving certain things and actually performing to a certain level. So, you know, to get close with these other types of business operators, you've experienced certain levels of success and you're sharing in that success. And if it's together, it's even stronger, that friendship. And, you know, we've experienced that with Tim, with St. Moritz, which has been absolutely mind-boggling. And then with Gavin on something else as well, which I won't get into. But, yeah, a lot of very exciting things coming.
Yeah, and they're both fascinating individuals. I know we've spoken to Gavin. If he comes down next, it'd be good to have him on. But I'm very excited to see what you're up to with Tim at St. Moritz. It's an amazing, looks like from plan wise, it looks amazing. Mm. Or what is supposedly there in plans, it looks amazing.
It'll be the best residential development on the planet.
Yeah. On the planet.
On the planet.
So not just in Australia. On the planet. Because the old cliche is in the Southern Hemisphere.
On the planet.
Yeah.
We're selling the biggest property on the Southern Hemisphere at 46, at 46 mil. But St. Moritz will be the best on the planet.
Okay. I want to just touch on a few points about selling, what people can learn from selling in general, mm-hmm, that you get from real estate. Because I feel like real estate, it's so loved, but it's also sort of this area where you're starting to get a lot of real estate porn. And this isn't, you know, talking about you specifically, but I've just found it funny looking at people like, I don't know if you know Zed Nasheed,
but I've never met him.
Okay, so my mate, who's a comedian, has basically built a brand of character that is based off Zed Nasheed. So it's obvious that the comedians are starting to see that real estate, you know, the videos and everything that you see, in some ways, can become interesting. So, I guess I'm curious as to what do you think we can learn from how real estate sells to people. If it's getting to the point where real estate is now like a form of, I don't know what you call it, it's almost like Big Brother in a way. You know, people sort of live vicariously through it.
If you look at the amount of transactions that are happening and the amount of transactions that are happening based off that type of marketing and media, it's such a small percentage that it wouldn't be an actual reflection of the industry as a whole.
Mm.
At the core of it all, it's a people business.
Yeah.
Okay. So, it's connecting with the person selling, and it's connecting with the person buying.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, most businesses are area specific, right? So they're paying a fee to be working in a certain area, which means that they will naturally get called in to properties. So if you look at the broad majority of real estate transactions, people will be up against two or three different real estate agencies. And a lot of the time, sometimes, it's pick of the worst bunch. You know what I mean?
It is. Yeah.
And the industry is getting better and better because of marketing and what we can do with drones and videos and all that sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, mate, history is not going to change.
Mm.
And technology, I don't think, will end up taking over what we do, because unlike buying a car on car sales where you can just do it yourself, there's so many intricacies when it comes to somebody's home. and the reasons why somebody sells, you know, birth, death, marriage, loss, relocation, financial gain, financial loss, all these are big life events with a lot of emotion involved and a lot of legalities involved. So it's understanding, again, the emotional side of it, which intellectual intelligence or artificial intelligence may not be there or may never get there.
Mm-hmm.
So, mate, this is as basic as it gets. People want to buy and people want to sell. You need to be able to cut the deal and be a glorified middleman that somehow is very good at marketing, at presenting. So that's what's coming to the forefront, is that you can showcase your ability to list and connect with people through what you put out in the media. So I look at it when we do a video on a property, there could be somebody watching who says, geez, he can present well, or he carries himself well, maybe I'll call him in.
Mm.
So it's actually marketing yourself through other people's campaigns.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like
it's true.
You're actually leveraging your client's marketing spend to also promote yourself. It's very weird.
It is, because you build up a profile.
Exactly.
And a lot of the time you're also doing it while you're working at another agency, because you're an individual. That's one thing that you highlighted on Tom Panos's interview, and he's had others. It's about you as an individual. You know, you're an individual brand.
You are. Yeah. Gavin Rubenstein.
Yeah.
Works at Ray White.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
People don't call Ray White. People just call Gavin. So
it's true.
It's really interesting. I think from a hardcore sales perspective, real estate's the hardest.
Yeah.
If you can be good at real estate, you can smash anything.
Yeah.
You can absolutely smash anything, because you're not an inbound call center. You're an outbound call center.
Yeah.
You're chasing. You're hunting. You're looking for opportunities.
And the opportunities are fewer to, say, a transactional deal where it's $1,000 or $10,000.
Mate, put me at BMW and let that phone ring and no one's leaving without having a set of keys.
Do you think that, or do you still FaceTime people all the time now?
If I look at today,
yeah,
I'll tell you how many FaceTimes I've had today. So I got here at what, 1 o'clock?
No, you got here about 2:30.
2:30.
Yeah.
So if I just go through today, these are the FaceTimes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Jesus. 6, 7. Gavin Rubenstein, 7. 7, 8, 9. I had 9 FaceTimes between 8 o'clock and 2 o'clock.
Now, do
FaceTimes, you can actually connect. Yeah. On the phone, I can't see eye movement. I can't see head movement. I can't see a deep breath.
Yeah.
I can't see a scratch of the head, a pick of the nose, a bite of the lip. All of those things mean something to me.
Yeah.
And on the phone, if I'm listening to you, I've pretty much got a blindfold on.
And how did you initially pan that out with people? Like, did you have a lot of people going, oh, what's he doing here?
Happens every time.
Yeah.
And guess what? They all love it, every one of them.
Yeah. So you just say, oh, I just wanted to see your face. And then they're like, oh, that's interesting.
They'll say, did you pocket dial me? No, answer. What for? I need to see you. Either come to the office, which is going to take you 45 minutes, or pick up the phone and let's have a chat.
Why do you think we've, like, as humans and people, why do you think we've been so hands off to doing that when we prefer human interaction?
More people have insecurities than you think. Everyone,
of course,
everyone's
yeah.
got their own insecurities.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, oh, my hair's not done. Oh, I look shit today. Oh, I got a big zit on my nose. Whatever.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, get over it and let's just have a chat.
Where do you think it's really helped you? Is there something that really stands out?
You laugh a lot. And laughter is
infectious. Yeah.
And it's, you become friends. You know, I've been to weddings and I've been to birthday parties and dinners, and I've had some amazing, I've gone overseas with people that all started off as a client. And, you know, we've got a system in the office. If you're a dickhead, you're not there. And if you're a dickhead as a client, you're not part of the family. So, you know, we turned down a $7 million listing, would have been probably 2 months ago.
Okay.
And the guy was really rude to one of our girls. And I said, you're going to have to call another agency. And he's like, why? And I said, because we're out of here.
Yeah.
We're bouncing. What for? Wrong energies, mate. Wrong energies.
I like that.
You know, you don't call him a dickhead, but you jump in the car, and the respect that you get from you know, your colleague who you've just protected because you've put their needs and their feelings before a paycheck is pretty special.
But also, that's one thing I've always had. You can always assess an individual by the way they treat certain people, like real estate agents or people who work in hospitality or hairdressers. You know, the way that they speak to them or converse with them is a good measure of an individual, I find. If I ever wanted to do business with someone or like, you know, in the past where we'd consider bringing on co-founders for a prior business we had, we would take them out to eat food or go to a cafe or whatever just to see how they interact with hospitality staff. Because, yeah, I think Tim Minchin has this quote. It's like, be very wary of people who are assholes to hospitality staff. But sometimes you don't see it when you just have an interpersonal relationship. You don't see it until they speak to someone else and you're there. You're doing a lot, as you mentioned. There's the stats that we rattled off before. I think looking at the website, you've got 764 mil in listings that you've had. You've got offices in South Melbourne and Prahran, record sale times, 150 Clarendon, the marketing business, production business now. I'm intrigued to see this video come out on YouTube. Where does this go? What happens in the next 2 years?
I think in the next 2 years, White Fox Real Estate will continue to carve its personality throughout the high-end Melbourne market. There's been so many opportunities of franchising and, you know, there could have been 20 offices by now, but it's not the path that I want to go down. I think you do that and you do lose that OCD capacity, and to have people running a business with your attention to detail would completely dissipate. So I think White Fox Real Estate will continue to do what it's doing. The focus is also building up the rental side, so really getting that to a point where it's the heartbeat of the business, which means that we can get even pickier with properties that we do take to market from a sales perspective. So I don't think there's necessarily another office in Melbourne for White Fox Real Estate. Definitely something down the peninsula, which I can see happening.
It's an amazing area. It's an amazing area.
Yeah, you go down there and it's, you know, to be an hour out of Melbourne and to have the type of properties down there and the affiliation back to Melbourne, there's so much cross-pollination in clientele and business.
Yeah.
I think I'd be foolish to not do something down the peninsula.
Particularly as a lot of your business is in sort of the Bayside, southeastern, eastern region. Like that is one thing I've noticed. Like Lauren's parents have just moved down to Martha Cove, that new development down there on the...
Yep.
What do you call it? The wharf or whatever. And it's amazing how many people we went to school with and how many of their parents are moving down there.
Yeah.
So...
it's because it's got a heartbeat. You know, you go into Mornington and it pumps. The food's great. And that's what we're blessed with Melbourne. We're sport for choice when it comes to food and wine. And if you think of food and wine, that's what sort of people congregate around. So I think White Fox Real Estate is a really special business. And it's now getting to that point where those writers of business in terms of deal capacity that I wanted to attract eventually are now really starting to poke their heads up. We had a guy start today who's just left his business, which, you know, he was part of for 10 years. And that's what I found with real estate. A lot of good listers and sellers that have years and years of success like me at Wilson, and then you get this ability to become a director, and a lot of them just loved cutting the deal. I don't want to look at accounts and management of people and this and that, but it was a good hook into them to stay, get them on the shareholders register, and we'll keep them for a while. And my aim is to now find these really good eggs in the industry that are good at cutting deals, that don't need babysitting, that want to be part of an amazing brand and good family and just have fun doing the deals and have the ability to work in so many different areas as long as the product is good and the people are good. So that's where I see the real estate part going, attracting some of these people that understand what they're doing in terms of the deal capacity and joining. So that's that. And then White Fox Marketing, I mean, that's just going from strength to strength. We've got our first global client on board, which is T2, which we do their creative. And just continually working with, again, same process, good people, cool businesses with the dream to, you know, build their own language, you know, have the right content strats, have their social media accounts running smoothly, coming out with beautiful product that which, you know, we can help bring to market. So long term, it's probably something that I'll focus even more on.
Mm. Oh, before we get into some short, fast questions to finish you off, I've got to ask you, we spoke briefly about what your day looks like.
Mm-hmm.
In a nutshell, what does a typical day look like?
Do you want me to go into the calendar and run through, say, 3 days last week?
Yeah.
Okay. So if I go to, I'll do Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of last week. 7 a.m. on Tuesday, I put the bins out.
Okay.
It's in the calendar.
Really? That's in the calendar?
No, it's in the calendar. Yeah. Because in freaking Alstonwick, they change 1 week's recycling, 1 week's green waste.
Oh, really?
And I don't want to put the wrong one out.
Right.
And be stuck with a bunch of cardboard. So then 8:30, that was a vendor meeting, followed by I sold my car, so that had to get picked up. Then 10:15, pitching for a development in Fitzroy. Mm-hmm. So White Fox Marketing to do its branding and its strategy to market. And then obviously once that was finished, White Fox Real Estate to then sell into a listing presentation for a guy that owns a property in Armidale at 11:30, which we actually just listed last night.
There you go.
A week later, into a 12 o'clock meeting with two brothers that want to open up a business, which they need strategy for and branding and content.
Uh-huh, yeah. I think I saw that post.
1 o'clock was a client lunch, and 3 o'clock was a pitch to get another person into the business. So a combination of real estate, marketing, and hiring.
Mm-hmm.
When...
And in between all of that, what are you doing?
In between it, I had
moving.
I had 1 hour between 8 and 9, and I had 30 minutes between 11 and 11:30, and then I had 15 minutes between 12:45 and 1.
Bang, 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 bang,
bang, bang, bang, bang, bang. Wednesday, 9 o'clock, listing a $9.7 million property in Kew. 10 o'clock was I had a couple fly down from Canberra, following me around for 2 hours, which. They paid for, but then we ended up signing them up as a client for White Fox Marketing, which is hilarious. That was very funny. 10:30 was into a property close, so signing up an offer on a property in Caulfield. Then it was signing up a offer in Toorak at 11:45. 12 o'clock was a vendor meeting. 12:30 was a new recruit meeting. So always HR in there as well. So just meeting people, seeing if they could be good.
Yeah.
1 o'clock was a client lunch. 2:30 was a FaceTime with somebody that needs to sell in Caulfield that is living in Tostate. 2:30 vendor meeting. 3:30 new listing appointment. 4:30 was a mediation meeting with another company. So, you know, I could keep going, but it's just, it's a big, big combination. Thursday was a very good day. Thursday was 7:30 brekkie with somebody wanting to do business for White Fox Marketing. 8:30 was a sign up for a property that was selling in Caulfield. 9 o'clock was a referral meeting. So somebody wants us to sell their property. It doesn't meet the criteria. Good people, but the asset's not worth enough
the right amount
for us to take on. So we were referring that to another business, not taking a clip of the ticket, just saying, look, these are the two properties. I need you to do a good job.
Yeah.
10 o'clock was filming, so photos and video and vendor interview at a property. 12:30, I try and do client lunches quite a lot.
I've noticed that. So there's a lot of lunches there.
Well, you have lunch every day. I'd rather, if I can shout someone lunch that I've done business with in the past, one, I get to see them, two, they get to then tell 3-4 people, what'd you do today? Oh, I had lunch with Marty Fox.
Yeah.
It's the knock-on effect. Every time you see someone, they will tell 3 or 4 people that they saw you.
Yeah.
So my theory is if I'm having 10 meetings a day, the reality is 30 to 40 people are finding out about that.
Yeah.
You then do that over 5 days, that's like 200, 250 people saying your name.
Yeah. It's a lot.
That's a lot of growth. It's a lot of network.
And what I'm curious by is, so on there as well, you've got, there's clearly a lot of sales meetings, which is what you need to do if you're running the business.
So I only do a meeting if it's revenue generating.
Yeah.
Everything else is outsourced to my team.
Okay.
So if I'm in a meeting, there is potential revenue coming off the back of that meeting.
Yeah.
Either with selling their property or that person buying the property that we're representing.
Yeah.
Or that person giving us their business from a marketing perspective.
Okay. At what point did it get to that point where you no longer had to do any of the other meetings? Like, and at what point with White Fox, because I know obviously you had those first 6 months, did you stop having to actively go out there with pitching people hard on generating that revenue? Like, I can see like a lot of this is clearly coming to you through text messages, random emails, etc.
Yeah. So it probably started, my EA, who's now our head of operations, Lana Samuels, she was actually our first client. So she bought a property. She bought a property off us off market before we opened the doors in Elwood. And she was living in the UK at the time. And I was neighbours with her dad. And he was out hosing the pavement. I was out, well, only two wogs in the street hosing the pavement. And he goes, "Marty, my daughter wants to buy something." I'm thinking, yeah, rightio, mate. And then he's told his daughter in London, "My neighbour's an agent, you should meet him." And she's thinking, yeah, rightio, here we go. Like, I really want to come to Melbourne and meet some real estate agent. And she came down the following weekend and she bought a place on the spot.
Wow, there you go.
Insane. So then we added that to the rent roll and she moved down. She got into sales. She did really well, sold like 6-7 properties in the first 3-4 months. But she said, look, it wasn't for her. She wanted to maybe move on, and it just wasn't her thing. But I said, well, what about, you know, being my EA? So then that started, and she's very, very organized, and we're very similar in personality. And she just helped change the way that my day was running. Like with, you know, all these people that were picking my brains, she turned that into a new revenue stream.
Yeah.
So she was very good at seeing what my skill set was and where my time was best spent. So before that, I never had an EA. So that whole first year of operating and doing the business that we did, I did everything. I wrote my copy. I did the videos. I did the negotiating. I got back to all the inquiry. I ran the business. I did the books. It's a lot.
Yeah.
So I've actually really only had assistance and had this new type of mentality regarding the calendar for just under a year.
Yeah, I know. I've had to start to learn this. Because that's one thing that Lauren has said is, like, I need to be less focused on doing, like, I need to be there for product stuff, but, and I know it, I prefer meetings. Mm. I just don't enjoy those nitty picking things. I don't like having to set up the Amex. It's not fun.
I don't pay bills. I haven't touched a computer in close to a year.
Really?
I do not touch a computer.
That's great. That's what I'm living for.
All my emails are on the phone or FaceTiming, and then my team will sort everything else out. If I'm not on the phone or face-to-face with someone, I'm doing something wrong.
That's the dream for me. No computer.
No computer.
It's one of those things when you're an extroverted person, it just drains you.
Oh, mate.
I get anxious from it.
I get very upset.
Yeah. All right. Rapid fire questions to finish you off.
Really?
What does your exercise routine look like?
Well, I'm, you know, stocky little wog, so I don't like to run much. I like to throw a little bit of tin around if I can.
What's your background?
Dad's Romanian Serbian. Mum's born in Northern Ireland with Spanish background.
There you go.
No, so look, I mean, the gym's good. So high intensity stuff, bit of boxing. I broke my foot New Year's Eve, so I'm not running anymore, which is really annoying.
Right.
Broke it at Tim Gurner's house, believe it or not. but yeah, no, just...
And you still can't run with that?
Yeah, no, look, it should have been healed by now.
Right.
I might need to get a pin in it. It could be a floating break between the joint, so...
Jesus.
Very frustrating.
I've had, the middle... What do you call the bones? The main bones in the middle on the foot, not the metatarsal. Might be that. Anyway, I broke those. It was horrendous.
Mm.
You basically had to go on a boot.
Mm. Well, I was in a boot for 2 months and still... So, I can't... I've got 30% movement from what I had previous to the break.
Jesus.
Or compared to my right foot.
Wow. It's an awful feeling, breaking your foot. I don't know why.
You just feel like an old man. I'm 31.
All right. Best purchase under $200. Or in or around $200.
The best purchase in... for some reason, I'm just saying a good feed, but that's an expensive lunch. Best purchase, under $200. Oh, a massage.
Yeah.
100%. I get 2-3 a week.
Really?
Mate, I love them. I can't be on my phone.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm in heaven.
I get one every fortnight. Maybe I need to up the ante.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the 100%. Best. Yeah.
And started getting them at home, which is a game changer.
Do you use Bliss?
Yes.
Is the one that you book online and they come to you?
I'll tell you what. Gurner's put me onto a couple of good things this year. Bulletproof coffee and these Bliss massages. So he's made up for that broken foot.
Yeah, they're amazing, Bliss. All right, last question for you. If you could have a billboard anywhere in Australia, where would it be and what would it say?
Anywhere in Australia, where would it be and what would it say? I'd probably just say the deal, and there'd be no branding on it, and I'd just hope that people would affiliate with the brand.
Yeah.
And just see the power behind it. In terms of location, I'd just ask where most of the eyeballs on it. You'd have to be in Melbourne somewhere.
Yeah. The Nilex silos in Richmond's a good spot, where the old Apple.
But is there still a billboard there?
Yep.
Even with the Apple construction?
Yeah, uh-huh. They've still allowed it. Apple dominates that spot. I think so. I mean, I saw it the other day. I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be south-facing, north-facing on that, and it would just say the deal and then maybe just the device.
Yeah.
There'd be no white fox. It'd just be the deal.
Marty, thanks for coming in. I know how busy you are.
Thank you for having us again.
Where can people find you?
They can follow at MartyFox01 on Instagram. They can look at White Fox Real Estate on Instagram. And they can then look out for our new YouTube series called The Deal.
Okay.
Which will be launching sometime in June, which is behind the scenes footage of everything that we do.
Right.
So from how I am with my family to staff to deals to property to marketing to production. It is literally an insight into absolutely everything with no reenactment whatsoever.
So you're basically doing a vlog? Like Gary Vee style?
No, because Gary Vee, he will not show you. One, I've actually never watched Gary Vee.
Yeah.
But I actually don't watch anything. I dead set don't watch anything.
No, YouTube, nothing?
Nothing, because I don't want to pick up anything that I will then try and do. So everything that I do is just out of my brain. I don't want to pick up shit. But from what I've been told is that he gives a lot of amazing lessons, whereas what we will be doing is you're seeing the actual deal happen, and then I cut back to camera and explain exactly how that just happened.
Uh-huh.
So it's a little bit, it's fly on the wall, but then educational straight afterwards.
A little bit more educational.
I haven't seen the movie Alfie, but one of the producers has said that it's kind of like that, where he looks at the camera and says what's happening, or some girl that he's trying to pick up or whatnot with Jude Law, I think, he's in it.
I've never seen that movie.
I've never seen it. But essentially,
it's a
camera coming into nearly everything. And what's fascinating is that we're going to closes and they're not saying, why is there a camera? It is bizarre. I've made them feel like it's just normal. And then as soon as that meeting's finished, I give a quick rundown on how it happened, why it happened, and pre-meeting, what we're trying to get out of this meeting.
Wow.
So it's a little bit more educational.
Well, we're going to make sure we link that for people listening. I think by the time this will be out, that'll be out.
Yeah, I think second or third week of June.
If not, they should be following you on Instagram. I strongly suggest that. Follow White Fox. It's a good laugh. And thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
Cheers. Thank you for making it to the end. Before you run off, subscribe if you enjoyed this episode, or do leave us a rating. For Instagram, go follow us on @uncommon_podcast. For YouTube, search Uncommon Podcast, and don't forget to subscribe if you're watching this video. Also, give us a like or leave a comment on what you thought about the episode. But until next time, thanks so much for listening. This podcast is brought to you by Neural Media. Are you an entrepreneur or marketer who needs help making podcasts, video, or animation? Perhaps you don't have time to manage a freelancer or the budget to deal with an agency. Well, Neural Media can help you with simple and affordable content creation, saving you time and money by taking away the pain of producing that content. To learn more, head to neural.com/media. That's neural.com/media. Play around with our pricing or request a callback directly. Listeners to the show receive a special discount by using the promo code UNCOMMON.